Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold, schiffgold.com, author of several bestsellers and radio host. Welcome back.
Well, it's always great to be on Gold Seek Radio.
We appreciate that. Wanted to start off today with the big dollar rally. You know, following the presidential election, many investors, institutions caught off guard, probably two more interest rate hikes, according to the Fed funds futures next year. There's been a lot of adjustments since then. Do you think that this risk-on trade is overdone at this point? And what might that mean for precious metals investors, please?
Well, I think the idea that higher inflation is somehow a negative for gold is completely wrong. I do agree that the markets are correct in that inflation will be increasing, especially given the stimulus that a Republican Congress and President Trump may in fact deliver in the form of some tax cuts, some increased government spending. As a result of that, we're going to have larger deficits, and the Fed is going to have to monetize those deficits. Inflation is going to be, is going to be moving higher. But that is a good thing for gold. It's not a bad thing for gold. What people are saying is that, oh, because we're going to have a higher inflation, the Fed is going to have to raise rates to combat that higher inflation, and those higher rates are going to be good for the dollar, and a strong dollar are going to hurt gold. But even if we do get one or two rate hikes over the next several years, quarter point hikes, that will not be sufficient to restrain the inflationary forces that would be building in the economy. And so even if rates go up slightly, inflation will go up much more. And so real interest rates in an inflationary environment will be falling, not rising. And that is very, very negative for the dollar, and it's extremely positive for gold. So I think the markets are jumping to the wrong conclusion here.
So if I understand you correctly, what you're really saying is that, maybe we hit 1% up to 1.5%, what have you, over the next few years. Really, that's just a drop in the bucket as far as offsetting the actual impact of inflation on the economy and thus real interest rates,
for instance. Yeah, and I doubt that they're even going to get that high. You're talking about 1.5%, and we'll have a hard time just getting through 1% on the short-term rates. But look at what's already happening to the long end. This could be the beginning of a huge collapse in the bond market. And, Trump thinks, or the markets think, that we could get away with this fiscal stimulus. The Fed's going to have to step up big league, right? They're going to have to do massive quantitative easing, because somebody's got to buy all these bonds. And right now, nobody wants to do it. Everybody wants to unload their treasuries. And so if we're going to send the budget deficit up to the stratosphere, who's going to buy those bonds? So you have all these people saying, now that we're finally going to get fiscal stimulus, we don't need the monetary stimulus anymore. No, we need it more than ever, because the only way we can have the fiscal stimulus is if we get an even bigger dose of monetary stimulus, because somebody's got to buy all those bonds to make those deficits possible. And the only institution that has a big enough checkbook to do it would be the Fed.
Exactly. And we saw that, of course, around 2008, 2009, for about a year or so afterwards. But, the Fed officials, policymakers have been sitting on their hands since then. We've watched their balance sheet sit in limbo, if you will, for about 2 years now. You would seem to think that if this bond collapse were to continue, they'd have little choice but to prop up the economy and the sectors by buying up toxic debt. And we could see that figure, around $4 trillion balloon, maybe to the next level higher?
Oh, yeah. I mean, remember, too, the Fed has been bluffing for years their intention to shrink that balance sheet. Meanwhile, it hasn't shrunk at all. And it's going to have to grow dramatically in order to enable the larger deficits of the future. And especially if you look at what's happening abroad, foreign central banks are major sellers of U.S. treasuries. I don't know where the private demand is going to come from. If everybody believes that inflation is going to pick up, why would you want to loan money to the U.S. treasury for 30 years at 3%? So, I don't think there's going to be any real private buyers until we get a significant increase in rates. But the problem is we can't afford a significant increase in rates because we can't afford to pay. So I think the Fed is going to have to, they shouldn't, but they will end up buying those bonds. So people who are buying dollars, they're doing the wrong thing. They should be doing the reverse.
You think they should be selling dollars and that this could all be just a false rally, a false breakout? I mean, you do have to admit the greenback touching nearly a decade, but multi-year highs.
Yeah, well, it's at, 13, 14-year high, so it is more than a decade high in the dollar index, although it is a marginal high. I mean, we're slightly above the high we were, a year or so ago. But I think the dollar is in very dangerous territory up here. I mean, it's a lot of speculators who I think have gotten caught. Maybe they're being stopped out of some trades that they were in. Because, again, it's a misunderstanding. More inflation is not good for the dollar. It means the dollar is losing purchasing power. So when a currency is losing purchasing power, that doesn't make it more valuable. It makes it less valuable. The only way that higher inflation could be perceived as a positive for a currency is if you believe the Fed will aggressively fight to contain the inflation. I think our Fed will surrender and inflation will win. And inflation running out of control is not good for the currency. And when people realize that the Fed is all bark and no bite when it comes to inflation fighting, there will be a big reversal in the dollar's momentum. And you know, I think people should be selling into it right now.
I mean, obviously, the housing sector, very sensitive to interest rate increases. There's been considerable boost to the economy, right, from real estate. If we see higher rates, that would seem to pull it right out from underneath the table. I mean, we could be looking at even more toxic debt then for Fed officials to purchase up. And what would be the stimulus? What's going to be the economic growth that keeps stocks, U.S. equities, at record highs?
Well, it can only come from more money printing. That's it's not real economic growth. It's just inflation that's propping up stock prices. I mean, that's what's been propping them up all along. And, you know, you've got all these people that are thinking, well, you know, it'll be like Ronald Reagan. You know, we'll get tax cuts and stimulus and the market will go up. But, you know, when Reagan was elected, we had been in a bear market for 15 years. Stocks were very cheap. And they didn't even start going up until I think the third year of the Reagan presidency, second or third year. We went through a pretty bad recession, but of course interest rates started way up and inflation was very high, and so we were able to bring it down. But we're now, you know, we've got interest rates that have no place to go but up, and we have stock market that is already extremely overvalued. So it's hard to see a repeat of the experience then, especially since you know when Reagan jacked up the deficits, we went from about 30%. Debt to GDP to about 50%. We're already at 105%. So we can't grow the debt now the way we did it then because we can't possibly finance it. You know, so this is a different world that we're living in. And if we want to move from a bubble to a real economy, the bubble's got to pop, and that means there's going to be a lot of short term pain in order to turn this corner. But nobody's ready for that.
For several years, as precious metals corrected, we saw commodities slowly decline along with West Texas Intermediate crude for the most part. We continue to find support in commodities, in the CRB, in crude oil, despite the dollar breakout. Do you see that as a positive divergence within the markets for the yellow metal and silver?
Yeah, well, I think that you're going to see a move up in commodities because of increased inflationary pressures brought up by central banks all around the world. And certainly if the Federal Reserve is going to have to print even more money to monetize even larger deficits in the wake of the fiscal stimulus coming from tax cuts and increased government spending to fulfill, the political ambitions of the Republican Congress and the promises from Donald Trump. Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot more inflation, and so commodity prices are going to rise substantially as paper currencies lose value, particularly the dollar. And as the dollar is weak, I mean, if the dollar is losing value relative to other currencies, that is generally the best environment for commodities.
Now, we've just, as you mentioned, seen a bond rout. Do you think that we could see the equities return to the mean? Because obviously bonds are not likely to rally back up to where they were. There has to be a meeting point somewhere. Where do you expect those funds to flow?
Yeah, well, if the bond market continues to sell off, stocks are going to ultimately follow. I mean, because interest rates are a primary component of stock market valuations. But also, companies are borrowers of money, and if interest rates rise, so too does the cost of continuing that to finance that debt. And a lot of companies have debt that rolls over, it matures, and they reissue it. There's been a lot of corporate share buybacks over the years financed with debt. So there are a lot of problems for the stock market if interest rates keep rising. So if they do, the market's going to roll over. But, you know, to the extent that the Federal Reserve doesn't hike rates in December, we'll see, or indicates that their rate hiking is over, there could be some kind of a bounce in the market. But I still think that the long end of the market could be under some real pressure here unless the Fed launches another round of quantitative easing where they commit to buying more bonds on the long end and putting a floor beneath the price. If they don't do that, I think that this, you know, decline is going to continue, and at some point it is going to weigh heavily on the stock market and certainly the real estate market too, which, you know, we just had a big number came out today on home sales, but this was, you know, from a couple months ago. But now you've got mortgage rates that have gone since the election from about 3.5 or just below 3.5 on a 30-year fixed to now about 4.125, 4.25. Even though those are still low rates, you know, historically, they're not nearly as low as they were. And if you've got record high home prices and now mortgage rates start to go up, that makes homes that much less affordable. And people are already struggling because, you know, their jobs are not, you know, they don't have the incomes and the cost of living has been going up. So the main prop for the housing market has been the really, really low mortgage rates. And now those rates are not as low as they were, but they can certainly keep rising. I would not be surprised to see the rate north of 5% by the time Trump is elected. And maybe even we could be at 6% or more, you know, early next year. And, you know, I just don't see how we can support the current home structure. I think we'd have to have a 20%, 30% decline in real estate prices if mortgage rates were at 6%. And, you know, what's that going to do to the banks, you know, when all their collateral collapses? How many people will still make their mortgage payment if the value of their house goes down? I mean, so this is some very serious stuff that's going to be happening if rates keep rising.
Exactly. I'd keep my eye on new housing starts. That seems to be most closely correlated with the overall Case-Shiller index, I think, nationally. It's a pretty good proxy for the market. You know, you talk about the inauguration in July. Where will investors park their funds?
Look at what happened the last time that we transitioned from Democrats to Republicans. It was when Clinton left and Bush came in. And, you know, during the latter part of the Clinton presidency, that we had a huge dollar rally. You know, commodities were down, emerging markets were clobbered. But when the Clinton surpluses turned into Bush deficits, the dollar began a huge bear market, a 7-year, 8-year decline. The dollar index went from 120 down to 70. And, you know, gold went from under 300 to 1,000. Oil went from 20 to 150. And the emerging markets took off. And so I think if we get another exodus from the dollar and the U.S. bond market, that that's where investors are going to go. They're going to go back into commodities, into emerging markets, into foreign currencies, into precious metals, and I think in an even bigger way than they did last time.
It certainly seems as though investors have maybe overreacted on the downside, given this new probability of higher rates in 2017. You know, if we look historically at the 70s, most of our listeners will know that rates were climbing most of during the 70s, and precious metals soared in one of the most spectacular bull markets in history. Do you see potential for history to rhyme this time?
Well, certainly the big catalyst for the move up in commodities in the 70s was the dollar, you know, going off the gold standard. And so the U.S. dollar being marked down accordingly, because it used to be backed by gold and now it was no longer backed by anything. And so there was no more restraint on the ability of the U.S. government to go into debt. And there was no real value behind our currency. And so there was a substantial decline. At the end of that, you know, we still maintained the reserve currency status of the dollar, even though it was no longer backed by gold. It was still accepted at a reduced rate, right? It was marked down, but then the world continued to accept it as a reserve currency. I think the next step in this evolution will be to reject the dollar as the reserve currency. I mean, it should have been rejected in the 70s, but instead the world held onto it, and that is the source of a lot of these major imbalances. But I think when the world realizes the predicament that we're in, when the Fed cannot deliver the rate hikes that have been anticipated, when they end up expanding rather than contracting their balance sheet, and when people realize that this is an indefinite expansion, QE infinity, and there's no, you know, there's no way to restrain inflation, then I think there's going to be a crisis in the dollar. And I think the dollar will, you know, will cease to function really as a reserve currency. And that will complete the process that began in the 70s. And this could be an even more bullish environment for gold.
But under this scenario you've outlined, shouldn't there really be a go-to reserve currency? Are you predicting then that the yuan, certainly not the euro, which has been struggling?
I think they'll go back to gold. I mean, why do they have to substitute another flawed fiat currency for the dollar? One of the reasons that a lot of people use currencies as opposed to gold is because of convenience, right? I mean, it's easier to transact in dollars or euros or yen than it is to transact in gold bullion, right? People have their gold, they store it in their house, but if they want to actually spend it, it's much more difficult. But that's not even true anymore. I mean, you take a company like Gold Money, which I'm now involved in. I mean, Gold Money allows individuals to earn, save, spend, transact in gold as easily as they can in currency. In fact, easier. Right? Anybody can go to goldmoney.com and open up an account online. It takes a few minutes, and then they can turn whatever quantity they want of dollars or euros or yen into gold. They can use their MasterCard or Visa, American Express, or they can do a bank transfer, and they can buy some gold. And now they own the gold, and it's stored in a vault for them. They can choose where they want it vaulted, but you can buy any quantity that you want, and then you can use that gold. You can spend any portion or gift any portion of the gold that you want to any person you want or any company you want anywhere in the world instantaneously. You know, you can make transfers for free to other individuals who can transfer it to somebody else for free. You know, there's small merchant charges if people want to be a merchant, but you can set your business up so that your suppliers or people that pay you are going to pay you in gold. Either they can pay you directly in gold, or their fiat currency can be converted instantaneously to gold as they pay you. So using the internet, you know, a company like Gold Money actually takes gold, the safety and the store value of gold, and makes it as convenient, if not more so, than government-created money for commerce. And so I think as people start to lose confidence in the dollar or other fiat currencies, more and more people will convert their savings into gold. And with the technology of Gold Money, you know, they can utilize their gold in their daily lives. You don't even need a bank account anymore. I mean, when you have a Gold Money account, you can get a debit card. Soon you'll be able to get check writing. So if you can get a debit card that's attached to your gold holdings, if you can get a checkbook where you can write checks against your gold holdings, what do you need a bank account for? Why do you have to hold any fiat currency? People can have their income, their paychecks, directly deposited into gold. And then if your landlord will accept, you know, gold in payment of rent, well, fine. You know, and, you know, you can just pay all your bills in gold. I mean, believe me, if I was a landlord, I'd want my tenants to pay me in gold. Why not? I'd rather get paid in gold.
Sure, theoretically, it's great. But you have to wonder, though, as big of a proponent as I am for Bitcoin, Litecoins, Ethereum, all of the crypto alternatives, the thing that I think is keeping some people up at night is the worry that, you know, politicians and policymakers can, at the stroke of a pen or a key, I guess it's a mouse click nowadays, change the playing field. I mean, look at India. People wake up, large bills are outlawed. That's something like 86-90% of their economy evaporates.
That's another reason to prefer gold. I mean, it's harder for them to outlaw that. I mean, although it's certainly happened in the past. But, you know, the problem with the cryptocurrencies, of course, is you have to have faith that the cryptocurrencies will store value. We don't know that. They don't have a long history of storing value because they're just brand new, whereas gold has a 5,000-year history. It's pretty easy. I mean, would somebody, for example, would you take your life savings and turn it into Bitcoin? You don't know what it's going to be worth in 5 years or 10 years. It may be worth a lot. It may be worth nothing. But you have pretty good confidence that gold will always have value. And you know, you can have, there's historic relationships between gold and other commodities, there's no historic relationships between Bitcoin or any of these coins and anything, because they have such a short history of being in existence. But the thing about gold, why it's hard is, like, when you have an account with gold money, gold is your property. And so now you're dealing with property rights. And a lot of governments are not going to, you know, violate your individual property rights, your right to own property, because taking your gold in that is like just seizing your house or seizing your car or, you know, your other personal possessions. I mean, there are laws that protect private property. And so that's what's protecting people who own gold. Now, of course, you know, countries go communist and, you know, they seize private property, but, you know, when that happens, we're going to have a lot more to worry about. I mean, you know, certainly your paper currency will be worthless too under the circumstances where the governments are trying to seize private property.
We really appreciate James Turk's gold money. I mean, he's been a huge friend of the show for quite some time, a remarkable business plan they have there, and it's working very well. But I would just make a couple of quick comments about cryptocurrency, in particular about Bitcoin. You know, I think folks forget the fact that thousands of Bitcoins are lost each year. There is just a fixed number, unlike every currency currently in the world that has virtually no gold or silver backing. They can print as much as they like into existence, theoretically at least. That blockchain is fixed in the Ethernet.
You do have a cap on the supply, right? But there's the other factor is demand. And the question is, you know, will people always want Bitcoin, or may they want something else, and may the demand for Bitcoin plunge because somebody comes up with a better mousetrap? I mean, so since gold has actual physical properties, since gold is desired outside of its monetary function, right, there's always going to be people that want to use gold, whether it's for jewelry or whether it's for electronics or whether it's for medicine or all the various uses for this very rare element, right? Those uses will exist beyond whether or not people want gold as money. But the only reason for Bitcoin to exist is because people want to use it as money. And if people decide they don't want to use it as money anymore, then it has no other use. And so it's now worth nothing. So that's the risk that you take. You know, yes, you know, there's a limit to what the supply is, but if there's no demand, then it doesn't matter what the supply is. If the supply is worthless. So I'm just not worried about that happening with gold.
What I was really alluding to is more of a symbiotic-like relationship. If you could have transferred gold, okay, let's say converted it into Bitcoin or Litecoin, what have you, and sent it to New York or Chicago, San Francisco, and had it converted into gold when you got there.
But the thing is, today, you know, using gold money, you don't have to convert your gold into anything to send it across the world. You can be in Europe and you can send your gold to America instantaneously. You never have to convert it to anything. So that's the power of the platform, that you're taking gold and making it instantaneously transferable anywhere in the world. Like, you know, because you don't have to transport it, because your gold, let's say you choose Zurich and you're storing your gold in Zurich, it doesn't matter whether you're in Japan or Australia or Canada. I mean, the gold's sitting there in Zurich, but you can access it from anywhere in the world. You can spend it from anywhere in the world. You can direct it to anyone you want. So you don't have to move it around. The gold is stationary, but you're portable. You're mobile, but you know, you can spend it. So it's the reason that governments were able to get people to use paper is they made it more convenient than lugging around bars of gold. But the internet now makes it even more convenient to use gold. It's actually cheaper. If I wanted to send you a tenth of an ounce of gold right now, I can do it cheaper than sending you $100. Right? I mean, it's easier. I can move it to you for free. If you had a gold money account, I can send it from my gold money account to your gold money account. It's free. How am I going to send you $100? I mean, I can put a $100 bill in the mail and send it to you. I mean, that's, you know, that'll take a little while. I got to buy a stamp. And if I wire it to you, my bank is going to charge me like $10 or $15, you know, or if I send it by Western Union.
How do you address anonymity factor that Bitcoin offers?
Look, yes. I mean, obviously, cash is anonymous, right? To the extent that I can put a $100 bill in the mail and send it to you, and that transaction is anonymous, right? So there are people that desire that quality. And Bitcoin, in a way, gives you that. But, you know, since it's all on the internet, I'm not sure how anonymous it is, because you know, the government can track all the stuff we do online. So I know there's ways that, like, I can own a Bitcoin, and maybe I can write down the number of my Bitcoin on a piece of paper and hand it to you, and maybe I can transfer it to you in an anonymous way. But I think the way most people deal in Bitcoin, where you're using your computer, I'm pretty sure the government can track everything you're doing. It's not going to end up being that anonymous to the government. I mean, it might be anonymous, you know. I mean, if I decide that I'm going to spend my Bitcoin, it may be anonymous to you that I've done that. But ultimately, the big brother, I think they'll be able to crack down. And I do think that a lot of people who potentially are utilizing cryptocurrencies in a way that helps them avoid taxes may find themselves with a pretty big tax bill, because the government will probably be able to go back and dissect a lot of these transactions and hit people with a lot of bills, because they don't like the fact that it's private, right? The government, you know, that's one of the reasons they want to eliminate cash. They want to track everything we're doing.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about precious metal stocks. Our listeners are big aficionados of the yellow metal and silver companies. I'd like your thoughts here, whether we're overdone on the downside.
Well, you know, I think the reaction to the election, the sell-off in gold stocks, is way overdone, because the idea, again, that inflation, higher inflation, is bad for gold is just completely ridiculous. That's exactly why people want to own gold, and an increase in inflation is going to be beneficial to gold, and obviously it's going to be beneficial to the companies that own it and are mining it and selling it, and people should take advantage. You know, we have our own gold fund, the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund, EPGFX is the symbol. Aaron Day is my sub-advisor. That fund, I believe, Morningstar had me ranked as the top gold fund for the first half of this year. And as of today, I believe we're the number two fund. It is about 70 gold funds that we track, and I think we're number two performance. So I think Adrian is doing a great job. We have a really good portfolio of mining companies, and it's very difficult on your own, especially if you want to get into the junior mining sector. We have a good portfolio there to know the real value from, you know, the frauds. There's unfortunately not everybody in the business is honest, and not every gold mine is worth anything. So you got to really know what you're doing if you're going to go into the juniors. If you're just going to buy the major companies, I mean, yeah, you can just buy the big blue chip companies and, you know, you'll make money, I think. But if you want to get, you know, some of the smaller ones, you know, let a professional pick those stocks for you. And we're doing a good job in the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund. So that's one way for people to really, I think, participate in what I believe is going to be a huge bull market, is to own my gold fund. EPGFX is the symbol. People can buy it pretty much anywhere. You know, check the prospectus, make sure it's suitable. You can withstand the risks. And people could also buy it if they have an account with me. You know, at my company, Euro-Pacific Capital, my brokers, you know, can buy the fund for you. This is professionally managed. And, you know, and I think that we add value as managers. I don't think just blindly buying and holding an index, you know, is the best way to go. I think that we could look at these stocks objectively and decide which ones are the best. And we can also decide when a stock might be expensive relative to another stock, and we can sell one position and buy another stock. I think doing that using your brain is going to long-term deliver higher returns than just mindlessly owning an index. You know, I think for, you know, some people think that that's all you need, right? Just, you know, that somehow, you know, you can't beat the market. But I think that over the long run, the market is pretty easy to beat. And, you know, so it's kind of easy to beat them if you're disciplined and you know what you're doing.
Any other contact information you'd like to leave today?
Yeah, well, people, you know, don't forget, I'm constantly doing stuff on the internet, my YouTube channel, The Schiff Report, schiffradio.com, my podcast, you know, check out my books, you know, my latest one is still, I think, very relevant, The Real Crash, America's Coming Bankruptcy, How to Save Yourself and Your Country, and, you know, go to the website, schiffgold.com or Europac Capital, europac.com, sign up for my, you know, newsletters or my, all the reports that we put out, and make sure you're on my mailing list, you know.
We want you to have an excellent 2017.
You too.
The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity. Brazil Resources Based in the 8th largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank, and founding director. Their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their RIA project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. We'll be right back.